This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
You are darn tootin'. It's One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you on a Tuesday as we continue to prepare for the 2023 NFL Draft.
17 days, bro sleevage.
That's right. And there is a trade that has already taken place involving a draft choice. The draft choice is not as attractive as the player that was moved, Steve. Former third overall pick in the 2020 draft, Jeff Okuda, cornerback of the Detroit Lions, is now an Atlanta Falcon. And all it took for the Falcons to acquire him was a fifth-round draft choice. Amazing. Now, I know that Okuda was hurt earlier in his career, but the last year plus, he's been healthy. He's performed. He's an uber-talented player. My only suspicion here, Steve, is the Lions did not want to undertake talking long-term contract extension with Jeff Okuda and said, we'll ship him out now. We signed Cam Sutton in free agency. We signed Emmanuel Mosley in free agency from San Francisco. So we have two guys that have played the position. We can line those guys up and go. Let's move on from Okuda. But for a five, for a guy that was the third pick in the draft?
If he's the third pick in the draft, here's what it means. For those of you who don't listen to us regularly, if you're the third pick in the NFL draft, you're an elite athlete. You are better at every sport you've ever picked up, because you're just that much better than everybody. That's what happens. When you're at the top of the draft like that, particularly at corner in the NFL, Brownie, you know what those guys do? They're sub-4.4 guys. They're big, strong. They got long. They're just off the charts athletically. So whatever it is about him that didn't work out in Detroit, whatever he has not done to sell them on his ability to play long-term at that spot, maybe they just don't want to pay a corner. They don't have that high on their priority list. I don't know. Or maybe it's something about his personality. We don't know. Or he's clashed with the coaches. Something off the field like that. They're getting rid of a really elite athlete.
Steve, on our most recent podcast, Bills by the Numbers, we discussed this. Surplus value in the draft usually peaks between pick 9 and 12.
Right.
It's very hard for those early picks to live up to to give you surplus value in comparison to veterans at their position in the league. And I think Okuda would be a representative of this fact, as the analytics experts point out. It was a very interesting discussion. Go check it out at Bills by the Numbers on any podcast platform you listen to, because for the first two seasons, Okuda was injured a lot. He only played 9 games his rookie season, only one game in 2021. Now, he played 15 games last year, but the guy's got 2 career interceptions in what amounts to 25 career games. 2 picks for the third pick in the draft.
It's not that it's just
I would say that's
games.
Not living up to the expectations.
And it's not just like it's 25 games. It's like over a 3-year span. So it's not like he just had one season and some games to get a bunch of interceptions. Yeah. Here's the thing. He's due to make, as a third overall pick, upwards of $20+ million. And
his rookie contract, 4 years, $33.5 million, 21 of which he got when he signed.
Right. So he's not that expensive. Right?
This year he only has a $1 million base salary. I think for the Falcons, they say for a five, the risk is supremely low here to try him out. If he booms with us, well, then we'll worry about signing him in the offseason to an extension. But we've got a starting caliber corner for $1 million. And all we had to do was give up a five. I'd do that in a second, wouldn't you?
And you just, and you evaluate him. Hopefully you can get him. And if he comes back and you want to sign him to a long-term deal, he's not going to break the bank. His marketability on the open market is not going to be that much unless he comes in and hits a home run with you. But if he does, that's all the better. You know, the fifth-round draft pick's not going to do that.
Yeah.
It's amazing how his star has fallen since being picked that highly in the draft by Detroit. I'll say this. It takes some stones for a GM and a coach to say we missed on the guy. But that's basically what the Lions are saying.
Yeah. Now, I'm trying to remember. Dan Campbell got there in 2021, correct?
Yeah, it may not be his pick,
so
nevertheless.
It's not his pick, and it's not the GM's pick, Brad Holmes, either. So they're not beholden to him. But, man, for a five, for a talent like that, I don't know.
To do that, it has to be almost a public opinion consensus. I mean, there's no debating.
Well, again, living up to the expectations of being the third overall pick, and you're injured your first 2 years.
Yeah.
And then last year, you know, you're finally getting your feet back under you. You only have one interception. Yeah, I mean, it's that is not fitting of the third overall pick, the production. It has not fit.
Right.
And that probably you run out of teams run out of patience with guys, especially when they're not the guy that drafted them. I don't have it. Like,
right.
The GM, Brad Holmes, in Detroit, he's like, I don't have egg on my face. I didn't draft him. And we can get a five here. I don't really need this guy. And here's the other thing. The Lions, as we said, they signed
they're
two veteran corners in free agency,
Emmanuel
Mosley and Cam
yeah.
Sutton. That's number one. Number two, this team's got a boatload of picks. They got two twos and two ones. Like, they're going to have no problem refortifying the roster with talent in, oh, by the way, a deep corner draft. You know what I mean? So I can kind of understand it, but I think they should have held out for a little more.
Maybe. I mean, like they've got the – I mean, this is – you know, they got the 6th overall pick.
And 18.
This one, and the 18th overall pick. Yeah. I'll say this, though. Giving up a 5th, getting a 5th for Okuda – yeah, you'd like to think you'd get a little more than
a little
that.
Bit more, right? Like at least a 4?
He started for him last year, or did he start? Did he start or did he just play?
I think he. Hold on,
because that's the question.
Started 15 games last year, 15 starts, a 5. Shouldn't you at least get like a 4 that could become a 3?
Yeah.
If that guy starts 15 games for you next year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think that's a cheap price.
Oh, my God. Atlanta, I think that's a fleecing.
Yeah, I think so.
I really
so.
Do. Maybe the Lions don't care. Obviously, they don't. They agreed to the deal. But, man, I would have held out for a little more than that. Jeez.
Yeah.
Or call another team.
Yeah, it's so hard,
say,
too.
Hey,
and
Atlanta's
I get
offering
it.
Us a 5 for this guy. You can have him if you want to give us a 4.
And you said it. He's the quintessential example. Now that you start thinking about it. And you chew on it, what's going on and what could have gone wrong. It's really difficult for a guy in a top 5 pick to make you think like, wow, what a bargain.
Right, but as you pointed out at the beginning, if you're a top 5 pick in the draft, you are an elite athlete. And what do elite athletes always get, even if they don't measure up to expectations initially?
Second, third chance. Second, third, and fourth chance,
yeah.
I get it. But that's, to me... Yeah, that's the crux of this. Is the more you think about it, it's you know they're picking these guys up high. Think of like even Josh was a 7th overall pick, and people and plus we all remember this and as Bills fans, Bills got crushed by half the population for making that pick.
Mm-hmm.
They were foolish, right? And you got to be willing to live with it, but man, oh man. 5th overall pick at corner, what is the standard there? I mean, you got to go all pro, right? You got to be like a Marshawn Lattimore, you know, a Tre'Davious White. When your first or second year, you're all pro. You know?
I think Arthur Blank is tired of the Falcons being irrelevant, which they have been the last 2 seasons. This is their offseason. Are you ready? They signed Jesse Bates, arguably the best safety in free agency. 4 years, $64 million. They signed Calais Campbell, defensive tackle David Onyemata. They re-signed their starting right tackle, Caleb McGarry. Just traded for Jeff Okuda. They traded with the Patriots for Jonnu Smith. And then they signed linebacker Caden Ellis, backup quarterback Taylor Heinicke, wide receiver Scotty Miller away from Tampa, their division opponent. So they're moving and shaking, man. They're trying to get things going for Arthur Smith in year 3. Now, the problem is they claim they're going with Desmond Ridder at quarterback. They also have the 8th pick in the draft.
Well, they can do whatever they want, but this, think about why they're in the position they're in. Because they got rid of Matt Ryan 2 years ago, and all that money came back onto the book. All his dead cap money came onto the books. Didn't he give them a...
They're free and clear of it now.
Right. That's this offseason, mm-hmm. they're finally free and clear of that.
That's so why they're spending money like water.
They got a little cash flow back after not... Think about it, too. If you've got $30 million, I don't know what it was. I can't remember what stinking Matt Ryan's cap hit was. But if you got that as dead money, think about this. And this is what we all forget. So let's just say, for instance, Matt Ryan had a $30 million dead cap hit for the Falcons this last year while he was playing with after they traded him to – did they trade him or was he a free agent?
Matt Ryan, they traded him.
Okay. So they trade him to the Colts. He plays for the Colts. But this last year, they couldn't pay.
Bite the bullet.
To bite the bullet. And they had $30 million of cap money. And biting the bullet is not the right analogy. You got the $30 million in the budget. You're not allowed to spend it.
Yeah.
See, the money's still coming in, but you're not allowed to spend it on anybody this year because of Matt Ryan. You committed to that guy 2 years ago. So it's not like they're missing a meal
right.
in Atlanta. No, they're socking money away. They're cash rich now because it's money they would have paid Matt Ryan that they didn't have to and weren't allowed to, or maybe they had already given it to him 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the case may be, they're just not allowed to pay it to anybody else. So that money's somewhere inside Atlanta's building.
Mm-hmm.
So... You don't have to feel bad for them, only that they made a bad decision. The money's still there. So now they get to this offseason. It's like, oh, look
at all this money we have to spend. Let's give a safety $64 million.
That's right. When you go to the store.
They're paying Jesse Bates $16 a year to play safety.
You go to the store and you say, Mom, can I have that? And she goes, well, let me check my purse.
Yeah.
And Arthur Blank right now is saying, let me check my purse. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I got it. Yeah, you can get that. You can get that, honey.
Yeah, we're not shopping at Vidler's, though.
That's right. That's right. There ain't no dime store. And that's where they're at. That's why they can splurge, because they got all that money they weren't allowed to pay for anybody last year. So that's this thing. The cap is real. It doesn't mean, and the owners do it, obviously, to keep them financial and make it easier for teams to compete. But don't forget, the money that they could spend, it's there.
Yeah.
They just can't spend it.
Right.
So you always get the feeling like, oh, my gosh, they don't have any money. Well, they got money.
Yeah.
They're just not allowed to spend it.
Right.
How much interest do you earn on like $30 million in the bank for a year? I have no
idea.
I
wish I knew.
I know, right? I'm asking you.
Well,
like,
we can do the math.
You
have like a preferred – let's just say you have a preferred deposit account
okay.
where you've got
what's that?
Eight figures sitting in there, and you can make 4%. Let's just say 4%, because when you're bringing that kind of money to the table, the financial institution will give you a preferred rate. Okay?
They'll guarantee something.
So 30 million times 0.04, that's 1.2 in interest. Just sitting
so
there
they paid,
doing nothing.
Yeah, so they paid for one guy on their roster, a veteran minimum, just by having the dead cap hit. There's a fit man on your 53 roster that you didn't even have. That's free money.
Yeah.
So that's where they're at, Atlanta. So now making this move for a fifth to get Okuda. All right.
I think it's a shrewd move. I like it. For the Falcons.
Yeah, I do too.
Give
him a fresh start.
To me, the pros far outweigh the cons.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And think about it for a guy like Okuda. So he goes to Detroit.
Change of scenery.
And he's like, I got injured. He couldn't get his feet under him. Whatever, the atmosphere, whatever. And the off-the-field life, his off-the-field life wasn't everything he wanted. Couldn't get it to right. Couldn't get it together. Didn't want to stay in Detroit all that time. Now in Atlanta, maybe he can live in Atlanta, stay in Atlanta. Up around Flowery Branch where their facility is, whatever. And it just goes better for him, and he feels better. He doesn't have the pressure of being the number three or four overall pick. You know, he can just be a guy.
He's going to be on a defense with Jesse Bates you know, David Onyemata and Calais Campbell up front. I mean, it's not like he's playing with the Sisters of the Poor. He's going to be on a good defense,
the
too.
The scenery's going to be different for that guy. He's got to be thinking, okay, you know what? Let's, you know, he's kind of be like the pressure's
He'll
off
be motivated.
Of a guy like that. Yeah, motivated and be able to play free. You know, just freewheeling, just let's go out and just kind of have fun again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You got to, that's how some, it happens sometimes for these guys. It's really something. A guy that comes in as that high of a draft pick, got all that money right out of the gate, and now he has a chance to, like, go back and remember, you know, how he got there with a new team, new stadium, new logo. Good for him, you know?
Meanwhile, it is pre-draft visit season, and the pre-draft visits are being reported now more than ever by the NFL national reporters. As for the Bills, it is receiver week, apparently, because according to the likes of Tom Pelissero from NFL Network, Ian Rappaport from NFL Network, Mike Garofolo from NFL Network, and Adam Schefter, among others, the following draft prospects are visiting the Bills this week. Jackson Smith and Jigba, the receiver from Ohio State. Jordan Addison, the receiver from USC. And then later this week, Zay Flowers, the receiver from Boston College. So a full week of pre-draft receiver visits, Steve.
Yeah.
Does it excite you at all?
It does. I like seeing those guys come in, particularly the guys you're talking about, Addison.
I think those are the three that they would feel more than comfortable drafting at 27. Heck, they may even move up a couple of spots to get one of those guys if there's one left. You know what I mean?
Right.
My concern...
Addison, Smith, and Jigba, and Flowers, yeah.
My concern, Steve, with the...
I don't think those are going to get...
My concern is...
There's no way they get there.
Well, my concern is the receiver run starts right before them. It could start at 21 with L.A. Because the Chargers are in a situation here. Let's not forget where the Chargers are. Their build is about a year or two behind what the Bills' build was. They built it different, though. They have two $20 million a year receivers in Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. And they're going to have to probably say goodbye to Keenan Allen after this year because they're going to have to pay Herbert.
Right.
The big money contract. You know what I mean?
Right.
With that in mind, and I know they've got some nice younger players on their roster at the receiver position, Jalen Guyton, a couple other guys.
Right.
But a receiver makes sense at 21 for the Chargers to get in the pipeline, develop, so when Keenan Allen exits, they've got somebody to fill that role. You know what I mean? So you can make an argument for the Chargers at 21.
Right.
Ravens at 22. You make an argument there. And you and I were talking about this, Steve. I know they have other needs, but you can make an argument for receiver at 22 for Baltimore. Why? Because outside of Odell Beckham Jr. on a one-year deal, they can't get anybody of any repute to come play for them at receiver,
which
I think is a reflection on the kind of passer that Lamar Jackson is. Not the talent or even the quarterback that Lamar Jackson is, but the passer that he is. He does not augment the value of wide receivers.
And there's a little bit of the fact that you can, even the casual fan will look at Baltimore and say they do their offensive philosophy different.
Yeah.
And that's...
It's the tight end that's the focal point in the offense.
Yeah,
Mark Andrews.
Mark Andrews had a great year.
He's had a great 3 years.
And here's the thing as well. I don't know.
But why? Because he works between the numbers where Lamar can throw the football.
Yes. We have not seen growth from Lamar as a passer, or at least enough growth as a passer.
I would agree.
During his career. And even with Josh Allen, it was like 2020 hits. It's like, oh, my God, look at this guy. Yeah. I mean, he's a completely different guy.
69% completion percentage.
And people lost their mind. They didn't think it was possible.
Yeah.
And so you haven't seen that kind of – certainly it was a big jump, but even a more modest jump from Lamar.
Yeah.
He plays quarterback the way he plays quarterback. Well – the team's not going to change their philosophy until Lamar earns their trust of them changing their philosophy. They're going to run the football. OBJ, yeah, I'll go play. He'll go play at Baltimore, but you're going to pay him $15 million, maybe $18 million to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're just not getting guys to show up over there thinking they're going to get average three targets a game.
Correct.
You know, I mean, that's OBJ is looking going over there. He wants double-digit targets every single game without fail.
Right. But getting back to the point here, Chargers at 21, you can make an argument for receiver.
Right.
Baltimore at 22, you can make an argument for receiver. Minnesota at 23, they lost Adam Thielen in free agency. You can make an argument for them at 23. Jacksonville at 24, probably not. They're all set. They're getting Calvin Ridley back off suspension. Probably not there. 25, the Giants. Guess where Zay Flowers is visiting before he comes to the Bills later this week,
Giants,
according to reports.
The Giants. The Giants may trade up.
They could.
To get their pick.
And then at 26 is Dallas. And I don't know if they would go receiver there necessarily because they got Brandon Cooks in a trade from Houston.
They ain't doing it. They've got
so they're probably taking a tight end there.
They got T.
Because they lost Dalton Schultz.
T. Higgins. And they traded for the guy. Yeah, they're set.
Then you get to the Bills at 27. But the point there is that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams in front of the Bills and only those three receiver prospects in Addison, Flowers, and who's the third kid?
Njigba,
thank you.
Smith and Jigba.
Who may even go earlier than that. I mean, Pittsburgh, you can make an argument for them at 17. Green Bay, are they going to take a tight end or a receiver? They just lost Alan Lazard to the Jets in free agency, and they need all the help they can get to put around Jordan Love if that whole thing goes through. So, yeah, you got three guys and about six teams looking for somebody sitting in front of Buffalo.
Buffalo's not the only team sitting out there who thinks it's a throwing league, right?
Well, that's right.
So, all of these teams, from Houston, who's got the 12th pick, and the second pick. I mean, they could do anything they want. The first pick, second pick. What are they going to do? Are they going to give the new quarterback that they drafted the second pick of the draft? Are they going to give him a weapon? Or are they going to give him protection? It's going to be one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Either one is bad for Buffalo because if they take a wide receiver, a tackle gets kicked down the board one more click. If they take a tackle, a receiver gets clicked down one more.
What you got to hope is some of these teams that have receiver needs, they also have corner needs, like the Giants, for example. So you would hope the Giants at 25 take a corner instead of a receiver. You're not hard up for a corner in round one. You just took one last year.
No.
And you have Trey White, who's now 2 years removed from the knee injury. So you
go ahead.
I think they will draft a corner at some point in this draft, the Bills, because it's a deep corner class, and you need to backfill behind those guys.
Here's the thing.
But not in round one. So you hope that, like, the Giants take a corner, you know, maybe one of
There's another layer of that, too, because the teams that are at the top of this thing, the Seattles, the Detroits, the Falcons, Philly, even Arizona, all these teams, they're in the NFC. It's a different world over there. You aren't an arms race with Joe Burrow, Pat Mahomes, Josh Allen, and Justin Herbert. You're not in an arms race over in that side of the conference, in that side of the league.
Right.
You're in there with, you know, Geno Smith
and Kyler Murray.
You're in there with Derek Carr now. You know, Derek Carr turned into he's
a top five quarterback in the NFC.
Top three. Because if Rodgers is out,
Hurts over there, and
I mean, and that's what you're looking at. So it's a different world on that side of the bracket because of the state of the quarterback play in the NFC. So the Giants are sitting there going, well, we get a corner, our whole defense gets better because there aren't any passers in this conference to, you know, really threaten us now.
Yeah. And I kind of wonder if some of these NFC teams now say, look, there really isn't an arms race here in the NFC. What if we jump out in front of everybody and add some receivers and do what some of those AFC teams are doing?
But yeah, you can add them, but Daniel Jones still throwing to him.
Well,
you know,
Mr. 15
Kenny Pickett still
passes.
Throwing to him. Not Kenny Pickett. Who's the guy in Atlanta now? That we think of?
Desmond
Ritter. Desmond Ritter is still throwing to
for
him.
Now.
You know,
they have the eighth pick. I wouldn't be surprised.
Who's
if
playing quarterback in Tampa?
Well, it's. It's your favorite. It's Baker Mayfield.
See?
Well, they might take one, too. They're at 19. They may move up.
The thing about it is, and this is the amazing part, and I get it, he was injured, but Matt Stafford comes back, and if he's even half of what he was, he's still a top three guy in that.
I just think the top half of round one is going to be absolutely off the chain bonkers because you got all these teams that are so hard up for a quarterback. It is going to be a zoo. It is going to be a zoo.
The NFC, if you get
I don't think the coverage is going to be able to keep up with it, how fast stuff's going to be flying around.
They'll be going to commercial break saying, whoop, we got to bust out. If you could get a young – if Richardson comes out or Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud comes out, Carolina grabs the guy they want, C.J. Stroud comes out, and C.J. Stroud turns into Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, or a mix thereof. Carolina Panthers are the team to beat for the foreseeable future.
In that division.
In that division and that conference. They got it because they're not in the same division with Jalen Hurts and Philly. And Dak Prescott and the Cowboys, they're always just trying to get out of their own way. I mean, you go right, boom, Tampa Bay, New Orleans, and Atlanta.
Well, but that's why I think Atlanta's interesting at pick eight. And don't think for a second.
They ain't going to be one of those quarterbacks.
Don't think
there.
For a,
Will
I know,
Levis
what I'm
is
saying
not going
to
transform.
Don't think for a second that Carolina, in making that trade from 9 up to 1 with the Bears, did not say to themselves, Atlanta's in front of us. They're in our division. We're going to the top of this board. We're getting the guy that we want. And if we pick right, we're sitting pretty for the next 5 years plus in our division.
Absolutely. Because they get a quarterback who may be, who theoretically is elite at a young age.
Potentially the best of the lot.
Competitive as a rookie. Better than solid as a second-year player, playoff caliber, and then elite as a third-year player, and you're building it around him. That's, look at Buffalo. Look at Kansas City. Look at all these teams that did exactly that.
Right. But getting back to my point about my concern about that receiver run brings us to our Twitter poll today. If the Bills look to add a receiver in this year's draft, which I think a lot of us feel is a strong likelihood, where would be the best spot to do so as you see it? A, trading up from 27, B, staying put and standing pat at 27, or C, wait until the pick matches the value. And it is a balanced poll out of the gate here, Steve.
Not a bad poll.
Trade up a little over 25%, stand pat a little over 25%, and wait until the pick matches the value, 44%
of the
vote.
That's hard, though, because what happens, you got all these, we all have these favorite positions we want them to grab, wide receiver, running back, middle linebacker, go down the list. But if you, the first middle linebacker that matches your pick, what if he comes at like pick 201?
Oof.
Oof is right.
Right, but I think this poll in the early going is showing you where fans sit on this thing. As much as – think about how many calls we've taken over the last month and a half about people that want another receiver for this offense. And yet 44% of the people in the poll so far are saying
don't overdraft.
Don't reach.
Don't overdraft.
Don't reach for a receiver. We want one.
Like most – I'm not saying the Bills fans are alone in this because every fan base can point to a guy who –
yeah, they got a crush.
You remember when we drafted and that guy was and we all got that story, right?
Yeah.
Bills fans are like everybody else. We've got our favorite. We've got multiple choices for that.
Sammy Watkins didn't live up to being the fourth
Marcel
pick.
Marcel Darius.
Yeah.
John McCargo.
And the Bills traded up for Sammy.
Shall we go on down the with
Dante Whitner?
Let's,
eighth overall.
We've all got those stories. So the poll is telling us, everybody's like, listen, don't sting me with that. Just get a guy. If you get a guy, a third rounder, and he plays it, it turns into a nice, solid starter, hey, you get what you got. That's where you find guys like Matt Milano and Taron Johnson and Gabe Davis. I'm like, you know what? I'm okay with that.
Not easy to land on, though, all the time, admittedly. It's easier said than done.
Yeah.
Finding the diamond in the rough
the
on
problem,
day three.
Yeah, yeah.
But let us know what you think. If the Bills look to add a wide receiver in this year's draft, which many of us believe they'll try to do, where would be the best spot to do so? A, by trading up. B, by standing pat. C, wait a little bit later until the pick matches the value. You can tell us at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the toll-free number to get on board. Open lines for you, and we are wide open for the next half hour. So feel free to chime in with your thoughts on that subject or hit us up on the tweet sheet by voting and giving us a reason why. We will step aside here, but be back with your phone calls next on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right. One Bills Live is the show. Thanks for joining us. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And we are talking wide receiver in this year's draft. The poll is there for you to weigh in on. If the Bills look to add a wide receiver in this year's draft, where would be the best spot to do so? Trade up from 27, stay put at 27, wait a little bit later until the pick matches the value. Phone lines are open for you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, and we have open lines currently. So jump on board, let us know what you think, or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. And we are going to go to the tweet sheet now to see what your thoughts are on this very subject. And Shane leads us off. Tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving system of the Buffalo Bills. Shane says, do whatever you have to do. May not be able to go high enough to get first wide receiver off the board, but if your guy is there in the early 20s, go get him. And we've seen Brandon Bean be aggressive before, not only in round one, but in other rounds, trading up to get a guy that they covet. Did it last year with Kyir Elam. Did it with Tremaine Edmonds. Did it with Josh Allen. So it's not like it hasn't happened before. And you and I have talked about this. We could see a small move up the board, maybe two or three spots, but nothing major.
Yeah, but I'll say this, too. It usually happened in a year where they had, like, seven or eight or maybe nine draft picks in the class. They've got six this year. There's not much collateral to spend.
What about a player as collateral?
Yeah, but
might have to come to that.
And what you do and what I've understood happens is that, you know, the GM says, listen, look at our roster. Give us a couple of choices of guys you would take as compensation and let us pick the one we can do without, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
You know, and or, you know, make it pick your favorite, you know, or whatever. Make the list as long as you want. So, yeah, you can do that a little bit so you can mitigate it. So you say, well, yeah, we can live without this, you know, we can live without whatever, a third guard or whatever, but we need the draft pick.
Right. I get it. But if you really believe that prospect is going to kind of put you over the hump, and maybe not only maintain pace in the arms race, but maybe put you a step ahead. Maybe you make the move.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it is, though. I mean, nobody trades up for somebody they don't believe in.
That's true.
If you, the guy.
That's the guy. Oh, my gosh, we got to get him.
Yeah, jump on the table. Stomp your foot. I said, no, I am not letting you draft that other guy. This is the guy that's going to be the, you know, that's where you get. If there's somebody like that where you got six guys jumping on the table and they're all going, yeah. Take him. Oh, well,
but
all right.
I think one of the reasons why the poll is what it is showing here in the early going, which is a lot of people say stand pat until the value matches the pick you have, is because of what we've heard all along about the receiver class, and that is that there really aren't any true alpha male receivers in this class. You don't have a Garrett Wilson type that you feel comfortable taking in the top 10 who's going to walk in the door and be your number one. There's nobody like that in this year's class. But if you're in the market for a number two, you can probably get that in the first two rounds here.
Or a guy can contribute. You know, a couple of these guys, they could play Z or X.
Right.
You know, they could also play the slot. They could play the Y as well. So, you know, they're versatile. And like Diggs, you can slide Diggs into the slot. That is absolutely no problem. And if you can get a guy like that who's a little versatile and who can do a couple of things, you think, okay, and Ken Dorsey says, yeah, we can put him here, here, and here, and I can put him, and we can get him, you know, 30 snaps a game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but if he's going to be a guy like Khalil Shakir, where he's going to get 10 snaps a game.
Well, that's a little different when you're drafting around one and around five.
That's right.
Right.
That Khalil Shakir is a fifth rounder.
Yeah.
We're talking about jumping up and getting a guy. You got to. He's got to be like
on
listen,
the field.
He's at the end at least
every
by,
week.
Well, at least by the second half of the season, he's got to be getting a lion's share of offensive snaps.
Mm-hmm.
So, you're in that kind of conversation now, right?
Oh yeah. Let's go to the phones and batting lead off today is Steve in Orchard Park. What do you got for us, Steve?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
Just a couple thoughts. I was rolling around with a lot of the, guys in the draft, particularly the linebackers.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Jack Campbell from Iowa. I love his size. He runs a 4.65. He's 6'5", 240-something. He's great instincts. He's a tackling machine. I know they got him listed at, 49, I think,
right.
As far as in the country goes. But, boy, he looks great to me on film. And I'd like him to get a receiver in the second round if that's what their plan is. But I really like Campbell. I looked at some of the other linebackers, and they're good. But his instincts are off the charts. He's got great hands. I don't know. Just want to know what you guys think. And also Jeff Okuda for a fifth-round pick. Hey, if he doesn't work out, you lost a fifth-rounder. If he does, you got a starting corner. So
yeah.
I thought it was a great move.
And you only had to pay him $1 million this year to find out. It's like it's a total steal as far as I think. But, Steve, you mentioned that you already know that the general consensus on Campbell overall is like – somewhere in the mid to high 40s. So are you a proponent of trading out of the first round and getting Campbell at proper value, or are you just want to get him at 27 and then figure out receiver later?
Well, that's a tough one, but, the problem is trading out of the first round, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they'd have to give up and so on and so forth, but if they just stood pat at, 29?
27.
27, and we took him at 27. I mean, is it that much of a reach? I don't know, because we certainly got a huge hole. And my point is, Chris, that's the type of size and speed that McDermott likes for that middle position.
Yeah,
and he
absolutely.
He fits the bill.
He does.
Yeah, that's right.
I would not be unhappy if they got Jack Campbell. Don't get me wrong at all. I like Jack Campbell. I like Drew Sanders a little bit better personally.
Because he's also Sanders is also a good pass rusher.
He can play two positions, and he's every bit, as a matter of fact, he's probably a little bit looser athlete than Jack
Campbell.
He's
better in space than Campbell is, I think, with you, Brownie. But that doesn't mean that Jack Campbell can't step in.
Oh, no. I'd be happy
if Jack Campbell can't rush the passer, who cares? The guy can play inside off the ball linebacker pretty well. There's all of that in that. But those are the two guys I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Because after them, 165, 165 plus. They're both 240 plus pound linebackers, if not 250. And they both have all these instincts and all this stuff we're talking about. After those two guys, everybody else is 6'1, 220. You know, they're safeties. You know, they're small, undersized guys. Now, some of them are 4'4 guys, some of those guys. Some of them are really fast guys, but they're small. They're like Terrell Bernard guys. Small, instinctive guys, and you just drafted one. So there you have it. That's why I like those two guys, too. Jack Campbell, I like him because he's a big, tall guy, and that's kind of what Sean McDermott's looking at. And we know that from Tremaine Edmonds and how much he loved him. Sanders is that guy as well. I don't know. I think what would be the smart – if you can do it, trade down as far as you can – and still get him.
Or maybe just a little bit where you feel you're safe.
And then, as far as you can, and if you can get another pick in exchange for that, do it. You get that pick.
You still get your guy.
And another second or another third. So now you got 7 draft picks instead of just 6. And you got another chance to get another Matt Milano and a Taron Johnson or Gabe Davis with the other pick.
Yeah.
And then you're really doing well. So you get the guy you want. Throw in another pick, and you got a chance at getting an even better guy that nobody knows, whose name nobody knows yet. You know, Taron Johnson's a kid that got the ball off his face at the combine.
Yeah.
I love that guy.
Yeah.
He's the, you know, what a
fourth round pick.
What a find. Mm-hmm. You know, so Milano, same thing. They draft Matt Milano and go, where's he from? He's Boston College. Okay, great. Can you imagine where this defense would have been without him? I mean, that guy's amazing. So trade down, grab some extra picks, and you got a chance at getting one of those guys.
Yeah.
Out of the blue.
Let's quickly go back to the phones here to John in Jamestown. What do you got for us, John?
Hey, guys. Wide receiver. I know when we talk wide receiver, we're usually talking about the offensive side. But as far as punt returner, kick returner, or special teams, who do you like, either the first round or later rounds? I know we got Hines, but, who knows what the future holds there.
Yeah, so, that's right. He is under contract for another couple of years, so I think they would see him as their primary return man. I know Deontay Hardy has some experience in that area. He's already on the roster as well. So I think there's a few ways you can look at that and determine, well, do we need to get a receiver who also offers us something on special teams? I don't know that it's necessarily a priority, and I'm not going to pretend to know who in this draft class is ripe with special teams return experience. I believe Zay Flowers has some as a returner at Boston College. I believe Josh Downs is a guy that has some return experience at North Carolina. And, you can work your way down the list from there. It is a plus when a receiver prospect brings it to the table, but I don't think it's the main impetus for somebody saying, let's take him in round one. They're drafting a receiver for his receiver exploits, not for his best. That's kind of like gravy, the return aspect.
But also, you've got Deontay Hardy you just got,
mm-hmm.
who's probably got a little punt return in him, and you know that Nyheim Hines can take kickoffs.
Yep. So now you're covered.
You're covered both those places. Plus, they can both do either one.
And we saw Khalil Shakir do some of it last year.
Right. You've got Micah Hyde who can catch punts and field them and all that stuff when you get down deep. So you've got enough guys, and I think the smart way to go, and I'm not saying anything that anybody else doesn't know, I'm just saying I think the better way to go, personally, is to spread that responsibility out. Say, you've got punts, he's got kickoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you give the guy both of them, that's all he can do. If you give him one of them, then it opens up a role on offense or defense for those guys. And I think that's huge to make sure you can maximize that spot. Certainly, because there are very different skills. Kickoff is much different than punt returning.
Yep.
Punt returning is more about decision making. Kickoff is about just it's total instincts. A young guy, young 18-year-old high school kid with the ability can do it in the NFL, kickoffs. Punts, you got to have a high IQ, man. You've got to know what you're doing. You got to know when to fair catch it, when to let it drop, the whole thing. There's a whole ton of decision making that goes into it. That's why Andre Roberts was so good as a return guy. The guy never made a mistake back there. That's why Micah Hyde is back there. The guy feels it clean and he never makes a mistake. Makes sharp. Remember the punt return he had in the New England playoff game. It's bouncing around. He picks it off and he almost goes the distance in a game that, this is the perfect. This is a Josh Allen's perfect game. So they're different, completely different roles. So it's best, in my opinion, to split them up. So having a guy like Deontay Hardy who might be able to do punts and give Nyheim Hines just the kickoff return, it opens them up to other roles offensively that could also be a place where they could make a play.
Yeah. One other receiver in the class that I saw that I believe, if I remember right, also has return experience is Tank Dell, the receiver out of Houston. Right. So just some options that I thought of off the top of my head here. Sorry I didn't have more for you, John. We take a break here, though, and more of your phone calls and your tweets on what the Bills do if they want to take a receiver. Do they trade up? Do they stay put at 27? Or do they wait until later for a better value? You let us know at 803-0550. Back in a flash here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Hey, if the Bills look to add a receiver in this year's draft, where would be the best spot to do so? You let us know at 803-0550. Trade up? stay put or wait until the pick matches the value a little bit later on in the draft. And it's not an easy decision because we're trying to make it here in a vacuum. We're not seeing how the board is going to fall, obviously, on night one. But we thought we'd have a little fun with it, see where you kind of came in on it. And our poll in the early going indicated that a lot of you were fine to wait until the pick matched the value, even if it meant waiting beyond round one, which I found interesting. Almost half of the respondents were like, well, let's just wait till the value's right. Don't reach for one. And that's holding steady at just under 45% of the vote. Other people are saying about a quarter of you are saying trade up, and about a quarter of you, a little bit more, almost 30% are saying, hey, stay right where they are. They'll be able to get a good player. What do you think at 803-0550, which is where we go now to the phones and to Mike in Pittsford? What do you got for us, Mike? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys. I would favor going with the value thing. And what I would like to see them do is get a receiver that has different traits than what they have now. And some of these guys they're mentioning, like Addison and stuff, I think he's like a Stephon Diggs clone and all that. So in my mind, in my perfect world, I think they need some size and some speed. And I'll tell you who I like that they can pick up probably in the third round is a kid from Ole Miss, Jonathan Mingo. He reminds me a lot of Eric Molds. He's about 6'2", 220.
Yep.
He had surprising speed at the combine, and he's kind of rising. He's starting to come on. He's flying under the radar. But I think that would allow you to then take your linebacker in the first round. I wouldn't screw around with trying to trade back. Just go get your guy there. In the second round, I think they're going to need to look at defensive tackles because this team is going to be hurting for defensive tackles in another year with everybody that potentially could be gone. And I think they need to develop a stud defensive tackle. That'd be a nice spot in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, that's all good, well and good, Mike. But as you mentioned yourself, Mingo is rising up boards here late. We're hearing a lot of buzz on him. I don't think he makes it to the Bills at pick 91 in round three. I think he's got a good chance to be there in round two, and I'd be very happy with him. Greg Cosell alerted us to Jonathan Mingo about a month ago. He was high on Mingo before anybody else was. And then Steve and I got a look at him. We're like, oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. And he does have size, and he ran a 4.46. You know, at 6'2", 220. So, not bad. And he's got a 39.5-inch vertical. At 6'2", that'll help you in some contested situations.
Well, I'll say this. The measurables are first round.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his production, you can argue.
Well, he had one good year of production, which was this past year when he, you know, was a full-time starter, played 13 games, 51 catches, 861 yards, 5 touchdowns.
Yeah. Okay. If you get it right, nobody's going to complain taking him at 27. But he's ranked. You see on our board.
Well, we're thinking round two.
Right. Well, 59?
Yeah.
You think he'll be there?
I think he's got a chance to. I think he's got a chance to. But round three, no way, Jose.
Could that be the guy you jump from 59 up to 50?
That's kind of a jump, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe not 50.
Maybe.
Whatever. You get whoever you want in that first at 27, and then you get. Or maybe he's the guy that you trade down from 27 down to 33 or 35.
Mm-hmm.
You take Jack Campbell or Drew Sanders, hopefully, and then with the extra pick, you can bottle that up and move up to get Mingo. All of that stuff's on the table, you know, right? Yeah, I love his athleticism. I love the upside of him. But I haven't sat down with him and talked to him.
Well, that's right. Now, I will tell you, character-wise, he was a team captain, and we know these Bills love team captains.
There's a lot in that. If they sit down and talk with him and he's off the charts, the kind of guy, you know, you want as part of the family, well, then that changes things. You know, you move him ahead of some other guys. And I'm totally with Mike in Pittsburgh too. You'd like to see a little bit of a different skill set. Yeah, this whole draft class seems to be guys. Mingo stands out in it because he's 6'2", 220.
Right.
Everybody else is 5'11", 190, or less.
Well, and the way he's most different from a lot of the receivers on Buffalo's roster already is he's not known as a separator. He's known as a contested ball catcher and a guy that is quote-unquote open even when he's not open because of the size that he offers you. A lot of the guys on this roster are separators, quick separators at that.
Well,
this guy is not. So he would be, you know, he would be one of these kids is doing his own thing.
Does that fit with the way Josh throws it? I don't know.
I don't know if it does.
Yeah, I don't know. Josh throw, you know,
well, Josh will throw it anyway.
Yeah. Josh isn't a guy who throws them open and all. Josh is a guy that throws it out there and puts it on him.
Well, yeah, but think about Gabe Davis's second touchdown against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah,
Fitzpatrick's right there, and he threw it anyway.
He gave him a chance. but Josh is a guy who throws it to the guy. He doesn't throw it up to an area and let
space,
the guy run
yeah.
under it. And I don't know. Maybe you don't need a separator for that. If you throw it to an open area, guy's going to go up and get it anyway, even if he's covered. But I get it. But like you say, from our conversation, Mingo's got some question marks that we don't know.
Yeah.
Might be the perfect kind of personality and with his athleticism and stuff. And let me say this. Separating is something you can teach. That's technique of route running. You can teach that. You can't teach 4-2 as easy as you can teach a guy to make an extra step on a cut.
I hear you.
You can't teach 6-2. So, yeah, maybe there is something there.
Break time for us, but when we come back in hour number two, more draft talk because we have to deal with the latest installment of Mock Draft Watch. And here to help us do that will be Bills reporter Matty Glab next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, hour number two, and it is time to continue our draft discussion today here on a Tuesday on One Bills Live. And joining us to do just that is Matty Glab, and when she's here, you know what that means in pre-draft season.
Mock Draft Watch.
Mock Draft Watch. What are we up to, 7.0, right?
7.0. Nice. It's all I do with my life. No, just kidding.
Well,
just
in April,
kidding,
yes.
Just kidding. It's the fun thing, the hot topic to talk about right now. So we've done 7 rounds of Mock Draft Watches, and we'll do a few more ahead of the NFL Draft as we're in the month of April.
So we've got 129 tracked so far?
I've tracked 129. We're getting up there.
Jeez,
I think we've done more this year than we did last year. The mock drafts just come out so early on in the season now, and there's so many that come out every single week. We try to track the most legit ones from the biggest names in terms of NFL Network, ESPN, CBS Sports, the big guys, because anybody can do a mock draft, right?
Joey Bag of Donuts in his mom's basement's mock draft.
No. So in Mock Draft Watch 7.0, we tracked 15 mock drafts. Of those 15, guys, we're starting to see a trend here. We're starting to see things shift. Of those 15, 6 linebackers were mocked to the Bills. 3 defensive linemen, all of them, in fact, were defensive tackles. 3 wide receivers, 2 running backs, 1 offensive lineman. So you're starting to see linebackers, wide receivers, and defensive tackles maybe take the scene a little bit as we near the end of April. So of those 15... the most favorite this time around, Drew Sanders was mocked to the Bills 4 times, the linebacker out of Arkansas. And then the wide receiver, Jordan Addison out of USC, he was mocked to the Bills 3 times. Of the 15 mock drafts tracked, there was 1 trade. The trade was a trade up to number 23 for Bijan Robinson, everybody.
Oh, good
grief. So, yeah.
So that would be, who's 23? Is that Minnesota or is that?
I believe it was. Let me see.
No, Minnesota's.
Is it Seattle?
No, Seattle's 20.
Seattle's 20.
23 is Minnesota.
There you go.
Minnesota. Okay. All right. All right.
So that was the latest 15, but of the 129, I think the most interesting thing that we can point out here is the favorite names. So Bijan Robinson continues to be a favorite as he continues to get mocked to the Bills at number 27. There's been some trade-ups for Bijan Robinson out of the mock drafts that we've tracked, but you're starting to see guys like Drew Sanders and Jordan Addison become favorite names. They're tied at number at being mocked to the Bills, the fourth most out of 129 mock draft tracks. So Drew Anderson has been mocked to the Bills 8 times. So is Jordan Addison. Before those two, Bijan is the favorite still at 22. Osiris Torrance has been mocked to the Bills 17 times. Brian Branch 9 times. And Drew Sanders and Jordan Addison are next. So that's new from the last time I was on.
So it looks like, I think the most interesting thing is early on it was Osiris Torrance show. Osiris Torrance, oh my God, get a guard. And then the Bills signed 2 guards in free agency, and everybody is completely off the train now, understandably so. And offensive tackle has kind of overtaken it as far as picking an offensive lineman.
Yes.
27, right?
Yep. The last time Osiris Torrance was mocked to the Bills was March 28th. The last time an offensive tackle was mocked to the Bills was April 3rd. But offensive linemen in general have not been a favorite position, I would say, really since mid-March, early March. So you're starting to see, I would say linebackers are really starting to shine in the last 2 mock draft watches that we've released.
Yeah, so, and this, they continue to kind of all trend that way.
Because,
and just like when you see the whole team end their season, it's that recency bias. You think that's who they are. And when the Bills make any kind of signing, everybody jumps on and says, you know, they're going to, oh, wow, now they're going to. Plus, I don't want to give them too much credit. We've said it a couple of times today. The Bills have 4 defensive tackles all going into this last year. Their
final
contract's
year of the contract.
Up after this year. It kind of makes sense that they kind of at least get one guy in the draft to give him some depth there going forward after this year ends
up. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Most definitely. And Drew Sanders and Jack Campbell, those are the 2 popular names among linebackers. We really haven't seen too many other linebackers get mocked to the Bills multiple times at number 27. So
right. And more often than not, on a lot of top 100 lists, we've seen Drew Sanders ranked a little bit higher than Jack Campbell. Late first round for Sanders, top half of the second round for Campbell. And as Steve and I have talked about on the show, Sanders is just a little bit better athlete than Campbell. Campbell might have him beat in the instinct department. Not that Sanders doesn't have instincts, but Campbell is like rock solid in that area. And I think
he's your A-plus student.
Right.
Jack Campbell's your A-plus student. And Drew Sanders is the guy who kills it in gym class.
Right. But he's not a dumb jock.
No, he's not. He's not.
So, but yeah, so it'll be interesting to see where the delineation is in terms of separation between the 2 guys that are largely considered the top 2 middle linebackers in the class. Trent Simpson has snuck in here and there as another consideration, though he doesn't match up size-wise to those 2. But generally, we've seen these 2 guys as the top 2 names. What's interesting is this has just crossed from Adam Schefter. Bucks Pro Bowl linebacker Devin White has requested a trade.
I just saw that.
Yeah, it came up.
The Bucks do not want to trade him, but he wants to be traded, and he's entering his 5th-year option at about $11 million a year. Now, with that in mind, if you think about it, whoever gets him, let's just say hypothetically the Bills are in on it and they want to land him, pay him $11 million this year, you're going to be right back in the same boat next year that you were this year with Tremaine. Are you going to pay him?
Yeah, but let's look at it this way. Let me give you a different perspective. Yes, you would be back in the same spot. You're going to be there with your defensive tackles. They're all going to be gone. You're going to be there with your middle linebacker again, Devin White, if you pick him up for $11 million. Even if you put it as a signing bonus and put out 2 voidable years to cut down on the salary cap, whatever, you're still going to be back there. You've got all these other guys. Gabe Davis is going to be in the last year of his contract. You get all this other stuff happening. Don't get caught up in that, because when free agency hits next year, you're going to have half of every other team available as well. You can sign them. There's going to be guys available. You're going to be able to fill out your roster with quality guys, and you'll have cash to do it because you're going to have all, there's not going to be any dead cap space.
Yeah, so Josh's contract gets fatter and fatter.
That's right. But having said that, you get a chance to interview all these guys on this one-year deal. And you get to, once again, pick the guys you want to extend. Right. The Micah Hydes, the Jordan Poyers. You get to pick the guys that you – Devin White – or Jordavious Whites. You know, you get to pick the guys who are part of your core going forward. Guys like Taron Johnson and Matt Milano and Dawson Knox. Hmm. These guys that have earned it. You get them in your building for a year, all invested, trying to get their best contract next on the next hit and see what you've got. And then you got all those guys and all the free agent market to go from.
Right.
So pick your spot.
You would think that if Tampa knows they have to do this, they're going to try to do it before the draft, because if a team, like the Bills, for example, gets the linebacker they want in the draft,
suddenly, no thanks, we're out.
They're not in on the bidding.
Say about this. So we just had Okuda go from Detroit to Atlanta for a fifth.
Mm-hmm.
That was for a $1 million contract. What if you can get your boy Devin White for a seven?
But
you got to take the money.
I doubt that's happening.
And do the Bills
want
to put
it,
the
though?
Bill
$11 million bucks.
Or would you rather prefer somebody who can play on a rookie contract
for four years? Maybe five. Yeah,
knowing the cap situation that they have and that they will have for several years.
It's tempting because, you know, we're talking about a guy who was the fifth pick in the draft. He's 26. I mean, it's super tempting because with where you are now as a team and where you think you're going, you're dropping an all-pro guy in the middle of your defense. It's really tempting. I don't know. I just think financially about the – you're going to be right back where you were this offseason, yeah, next year at this time, and you may not be able to keep him either. So is your team better served for the continuity of the play caller in the middle of your defense – to be locked in for the next four or 5 years?
So,
or is it better to have the guy who is proven at this level and is all-pro caliber?
What you're telling me is Devin White, signing Devin White is an all-in move.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, that's what it is.
Not signing him.
Trading for him. Trading him. Making this deal for Devin White is a signal that the Bills, they're like going, hey,
all the
Jack Campbell, you're nice.
Well,
Drew Sanders,
okay.
We're going to win now with this guy.
Well,
because the money is a problem.
Yes and no, because he's entering the last year of his contract. So it's not
that's
like
the ultimate win
not
now.
Like, it's not like the 6-year, $120 million for Vaughn. It's, well, we'll pay this guy $11 million this year.
That is a total win now move.
Yeah.
That's a win immediate, like today, move.
And then we'll figure it out after this year.
Yeah.
Is that position more important than other positions
that you could spend? No, what are they? They're spending that on
$8
Milano.
Million on?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. We shouldn't forget that the Bills only have 6 draft choices. I mean, we may see the most undrafted signings here in the McDermott Bean era. Because you still got a roster to fill out. What do you got, 69 players on the roster, and you got to get to 90 for the offseason? You only got 6 draft picks.
Last year they picked up a couple at the end of the NFL draft.
Yeah, I think it's going to be about 7 or 8.
They always do.
Maybe 10.
Everybody does. It's a frenzy. Because they all have their preferred free agents as young kids. And so after these kids are sitting around in their dorms, in their houses, in their little parties, and they don't get drafted, their phone starts to ring immediately. It happened with my son. When he was at Cornell, the minute that last pick is made, he got a call from not his representation and a couple of teams. So it just happens that fast. They try and because they're going to get snapped up. They're going to get snapped up, and
like
it's all
stock market.
It's like the stock market at the closing bell. You got to get your trades in now, you know, to get the stocks you want. And like you said, do you get a guy like Levi Wallace who turns into a 4-year starter for you, or do you get Joey Bag of Donuts who you wish you're doing it because the guy was your high school coach,
right?
You know, his cousin was your high school coach. You know, that's the kind of thing that happens. So that's it. It happens fast, and the Bills are going to have to do it. With 6 picks, they got some work to do.
Yeah. Maddie, the safety position has also dropped off. since you started the mock drafts.
Oh, yeah.
That's like
that's I think that's
disappeared.
The biggest position that's dropped off since we started doing the mock drafts. I mean,
they brought back not only Jordan Poyer, but then they signed Taylor Rapp.
Right.
So that, I mean, I understand why it's disappeared from the mock drafters, you know, picks for the Bills.
It is
and
gone,
in the fact
gone.
That it's considered to be a weak safety class, and that doesn't help either.
Yeah, so that's where you get these skewed numbers from. That's why Brian Branch was mocked to the Bills nine times, is because all of that was done really before free agency started.
Yeah, January, February, and all that. Which, once again, reiterates the foolishness of doing a mock draft before free agency. And
I know. It's tough.
I mean, I'm not blaming the people that put them together. It's their editors that are telling them, hey, you got to do one for us. Get it up.
Yeah, it's more of a mock drafts before free agency are more of roster evaluations than they are, you know, draft picks.
So it really is throwing darts. I kind of feel for the people that have to put those up.
We've got a few names. Should we talk about those few names?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's do it.
All right. So I wanted to talk about two defensive tackles and an offensive tackle. So Mazi Smith is the first guy we'll talk about. Steve, I know that's a name that you've talked about before because you like him. So this kid is 6'3", 323, redshirt junior, coming out of college football. He's a big player. He's the type of guy that will plug up the middle of the defensive line for you. Per Next Gen Stats, he had the second best athleticism score at the Combine. He was first team All-Big 12 in 2022. He's played in 35 career games, had 28 starts. He only played in 7 games his first 2 years and has played in 28 in his last 2 years, so has a big amount of tape in his last two seasons. He's played in different spots along the defensive line, but started in 14 games at nose tackle in his senior season. So last year he had 48 total tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss, a half sack, and 1 forced fumble. He only has a half sack in his entire career. So when you turn on the tape on this guy, he's got strong arms. He's got power to his punch. He's got a nice swim move that he uses a lot. His strength shows up on tape with the way that he can move offensive linemen to get off blocks. He can chase a guy down. He has good speed for how big he is. I mean, 6'3", 323, and he can move fast.
He ran a 4.85 40.
He's got the width
a
to 4, him.
4.85.
That was at his pro.
He can take on double teams.
He didn't run at the combine because he had a hamstring injury.
Yeah. He is unpolished in ways, but you get the upside with his size and quickness, the intangibles there. Some people say that he could be more of a day two pick rather than a first round guy. NFL Network says he needs to be better at taking on double teams and is unlikely to see many passing downs as a pro. What do you guys think about Mazi Smith?
Yeah,
he's got some potential.
And that's what you're banking on.
Yes.
Because the production
only has a half sack in his entire career.
2 year starter. I think if you like him or you love him, you think he just has to put it all together.
Exactly.
And, you know, reach his full potential. If you're worried about him, it's because, oh man, does this guy just get discouraged when a double team comes at him? Like, what's this guy doing? Is he internally motivated? All of that stuff that you worry about with these bigger players. But the athleticism is no debate. I mean, there is no debate there. And his arms are almost 34 inches long.
Yeah, he's a short guy, 6'3". I say short. He's 6'3", weighs 323. He's a big dude with long arms.
He
and down
up
inside
space. That's
so
what you need.
If he was to be an NFL draft pick, at least a day one, and you want him to play three downs, your biggest hope right now in the beginning would be he would soak up a double team, allowing other guys to be singled.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that he's – we'd have to see that because, you know, you're on the Bills team, you know you're going to double Von Miller or chip him, and you're going to try and double Daquan, and maybe Rousseau on the other side or one of those other guys. Mazi Smith is not going to get doubled. He'd better be able to get some penetration.
Right. The knock on him was like taking plays off, conserving energy, those kinds of things. Because there were stretches of games where you just flat out didn't notice him.
Yeah,
and he's playing on a good defense.
He's cherry picking,
I mean, it's not like it's him and a bunch of guys. He's got quality talent around him. So I think the people that are his detractors say, well, why didn't he show more? Why didn't he produce more? And then there are other people who are like, ah, he's just got to put it all together.
Mm-hmm.
So he's probably early round two, maybe he sneaks into the bottom of round one.
He's been
right?
mocked to the Bills a couple of times. He showed up in Mock Draft Watch 7.0. So that's why I wanted to throw his name out there, discuss him. Another defensive tackle who's shown up a couple times as of late on mock drafts, going to the Bills at number 27, is defensive tackle Brian Brazee. He's from Clemson. He's 6'5". He's 298, redshirt sophomore. He did tear his ACL in his second year, really his first year playing in terms of how many games that he played. But he played in 26 games over his three-year career with Clemson. He's the former number one overall recruit coming out of high school. He had 35 sacks in high school. He's a two-time first-team All-American in high school. He did a lot on tape in high school. He got hurt, tore his ACL in that second season, and he's kind of coming back from that. So the tape in college didn't impress like the tape in high school did. He also contributed offensively in Clemson's jumbo package, so a little bit of versatility there. In his career with Clemson, he has 50 total tackles, 9 sacks, 15 TFLs, 5 passes defense, and an interception. In his final season with Clemson, he had 3.5 sacks, 5.5 TFLs. This guy's light on his feet. When you turn on his tape, when he gets loose, it's like a truck coming after a quarterback. He slips past offensive linemen with ease. He's determined to get to that quarterback. It seems like he's hard to even get into a block because he's always on the move. He's a good run defender. He can take on double teams. I think with him, you just need more from him on tape, as he's really only had 2 seasons to play. He only played in 4 games in that 2021 season. He's not a project, but you are taking him on knowing there's growing up that needs to happen. There's growing that needs to happen with him.
Yeah, I mean, the athleticism is readily apparent. Like, there aren't too many 6'5 guys that are this fluid. You know, there's some stiffness in their hips, or they can't twist and bend. This guy's 6'5". He can bend, twist, flatten coming around. I mean, they would line him up at defensive end sometimes.
Yeah.
Because at 300 pounds, he could do that. And I'm not saying he's Calais Campbell, but there's athleticism that is similar to Calais Campbell.
And you can't teach that. Those are the intangibles that him and Smith have from Michigan. I think Brian Brazee has a little bit more of that athleticism, and you see it in the way that he is motivated to get after the quarterback.
Yeah. One thing you notice when you watch him is he struggles to disengage from the blocker, but when he does get a lane to the quarterback, he closes fast.
Oh, yeah.
He can really close on the quarterback. So when he does get a crease in the pass protection, or when he does get around the guy who's trying to block him, he's a really good, as you see it a ton, they do it with him a ton, he stunts a lot. Because of his athleticism and his ability to run, he can run side to side and get up. That gives him a lane to get up through the quarterback. They use that really well at Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
And you see him starting at a defensive tackle and going looping out to the end, or vice versa, looping to the other side of the ball on the pass rush. Because of his speed and athleticism, he can do that and still get home. But he does struggle just one-on-one going from here to there through one guy to the quarterback.
Right. I mean, I will say this, though. Mazi Smith really didn't have a lot working against him where you say, well, what's going on with the production there? Whereas with Brazee, it's a totally different circumstance. Torn ACL, misses a whole year, and then he's dealing with his younger sister who had brain cancer while he was playing, and then she ultimately passed away and succumbed to the disease, unfortunately. So
he's been through it.
I think he's going to get a pass from a lot of teams because of what he's had to deal with through his
college
career.
He's the former number one overall recruit coming out of high school.
It'll be interesting, too, because he's, again, you get to this point where you're picking this guy and this guy and that guy where, you know, you want to sit down with him like we're sitting around this table and saying, you know, okay, what's your story? How you doing? What's, you know,
he's got a compelling story.
Right. And he's got and you find out what kind of guy he is.
Mm-hmm. He played for a big school in Clemson. He's played against great college football teams.
Yeah. He's an intriguing product. Now he's playing defensive tackle and he only weighs right at 300 pounds.
298 is what he weighed in at the combine. Ed Oliver's 287.
But you know what? You gotta have some big boys down inside.
Doesn't hurt, and it's not considered a super strong defensive tackle class. So if you really feel like you got to get one, you may want to get one sooner.
It's a throwing league too, and this is a defensive tackle that can rush the passer.
Then later, right?
In fact, more so than stop the run, in fact.
Yes.
Yes.
Maddie, we are out of time. I want you to hold that one player you had left for next mock draft. Watch next week because it's Steve's favorite player for the Bills at 27. So we will get to him next time you are back for Mock Draft Watch 8.0. When is that scheduled to go up on BuffaloBills.com?
Friday morning, I would say.
Friday morning.
8 o'clock-ish, you can expect it up.
Right. And I know that Kuiper just had a mock draft come out today, so that'll be up on 8.0, among others. That's Maddie Glab helping us out with the Mock Draft Watch. She'll be back for another installment next week here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. It's a Twitter poll Tuesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, One Bills Live. As we have been asking you, if the Bills look to add a wide receiver in this year's draft, where would be the best spot to do so? Trade up, stay put at 27, or wait until the pick matches the value at the receiver position? And a majority of you are still choosing to wait until the pick matches the value. 45% of you are in favor of that. A lot of you would like to stand pat at 27, while just over a quarter of you are saying, trade up, go get the guy.
It's long been my philosophy and observation. No matter where you pick somebody, if they're that guy, nobody cares.
if it was deemed too early, you mean?
Right.
Yeah, nobody
cares. Boy, they reached for him. He's in the Hall of Fame, but they reached for him on draft day.
Larry Fitzgerald, what were they thinking?
Right.
Yeah, I get it.
You could have traded back and got him at 22 instead of 16 or whatever. And that's what it's my – and it's true, but the only way you get credit for anything is for a guy like Milano. I keep bringing him up, Milano, Taron Johnson, Gabe – yeah, fifth rounders that turn into all pros.
There you go.
Those are the rarest of cats right there.
Yeah. Let's go to the phone, see what you think at 803-0550. Open line for you there. We go to Sarah in Penfield. What do you got for us, Sarah?
How you doing, guys?
Good, good.
I'm enjoying, I can't wait for 17 days until we get to the draft. Mm-hmm. I think, to be honest, we should hold off on a wide receiver and look what comes up in the third or fourth round. I think our first, we should look at, you know, Jack Campbell, and I really like Drew Sanders in the first round, and then maybe go in the second round to a good tight end. Mm-hmm. Two tight end out would be great. You know, I think that would give us a different dimension. You know, I mean, look at Kelsey. I mean, and I think a big, tall, you know, we've got a good class of tight ends. We've got Kincaid, Washington, Musgrave. I think any of those would fit our team very well. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks for the call. Tight end would be intriguing. I'm not going to debate that for a second. You're right, Sarah. It is a strong class. At the position, they're saying the strongest in a decade, as you have upwards of seven guys in the top 100, you know, in the entire class. So, yeah. And your point about how it could change the offense in terms of how teams defend the Bills is accurate also. Like Darnell Washington, for example, like that guy at 6'7", 265, he can help you in the run game. It's like having an extra offensive tackle out there. But then he could also slip out and catch a pass in the 10 to 15-yard range and then hurdle DBs on his way to the end zone.
Well, he can spear it, no question, because when they throw it to him, it's like, when I say spear it, like if the football was a fish and it was zinging by him, he sticks an 11-inch hand up, and it's like the rest of us catching a Nerf ball. I mean, the guy's got enormous physical tools.
It's like someone shooting a Pez dispenser at him, and he's catching a Pez in his hand.
That's right.
What it looks like.
So, yeah, there's guys out there that could help. You got to realize, too, if you're going to go too tight end and do that predominantly.
Yeah, but a guy like Darnell Washington in that keeps you unpredictable, though, doesn't it?
Well, yes.
It's not your mom and dad's 12 personnel.
Absolutely. But then you got, I would say, probably at this point, it would be Diggs on the outside, Davis on the other outside.
Knox.
Washington and Knox. And then James Cook. So, you
and
know,
off you go.
Yes, also, but you know, Deontay Hardy doesn't see the field.
Yep.
None of those guys. And Khalil Shakir doesn't see the field. You know,
It might not be every week, but, I mean, I think we saw games
Might be nice red zone offense, that's for sure.
We saw games where, you know, Dorsey was changing the formation a lot through the first two possessions. You know, going 11, and then 12, 12, 11, 21, 10. Like, he was all over the map on some early possessions and games just to keep the opposing defense off balance. I just like the unpredictable nature that you would still have in 12 personnel, traditionally a run look, with guys like a Darnell Washington, like even the Notre Dame kid. He's a complete tight end. He can block the snot out of you, but he can also catch, you know, in the short to intermediate range.
Yeah, and you think about the skill sets that we know the Bills possess. You added Darnell Washington to that, who is a big – I mean, he's absolutely enormous. Get him down in the red zone. There's not – you can't man up the guy. I mean, he gets in the red zone and just stands there. You throw the ball up above the crossbar, he can go up and get it. Then you put Dawson Knox in there as well. And then you got a tight end like – the third tight end.
Quentin Morris,
who can really catch, who's big. Well, then now all of a sudden you got these guys that are threats down in the red zone, but also you got a quarterback's 250 pounds. He'll take the snap and tuck it under his arm and follow all three of them. So it is intriguing, an intriguing combination, because I know, you know, Quentin Morris can really catch. He's got great hands.
Yeah.
This guy, Darnell Washington, same thing. And Dawson Knox, I mean, he's made money in the red zone. So, yeah, I think it's an intriguing combination and possibility, although maybe for a game here, a game there, you'd have a lot of 12 personnel, tight end.
I think the thing that's very appealing about Washington, too, is this guy was a five-star recruit, and he was the number two athlete in the 2020 recruiting class. Number one, by the way, was Drew Sanders. But he came into Georgia. He didn't get on the field until last year, and even then, he only started six games. Why? Because they got Brock Bowers, who's going to probably go in the top 10 next year. He's not even draft eligible. So here's a five-star coming to Georgia, and he had to take a back seat, play, you know, be the second tight end, play it, you know, do what's best for the team kind of thing, and he did it. And even though he started four, they played two tight ends a lot. Georgia did. With Bowers and him on the field at the same time. My God.
You do that when you got.
And he only caught 28 balls, but he was still second team all SEC. That's hard to do.
Right.
When you're not playing a lot.
We've seen it happen with other players. I mean, we've seen it with, let's say him again, Taron Johnson and Matt Milano. They're better pro players than they are college players. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The pro game is tailored differently than the college game. And when you find a niche and a spot where you can thrive and a system that allows you to do that, good college players become great NFL players. And great college players can further their greatness in the NFL as well. But you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So there's that possibility. And it works the other way, too. Unfortunately, we've seen all too often at the top of these drafts where a college player comes in, he can't duplicate his success at the college ranks because he's playing against too good of guys. It works both ways.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see, though, because a guy like the reason that made me think of that was a guy like Darnell Washington may turn out to be a better pro than the guy he was playing behind in Georgia.
Brock Bowers is pretty good, though.
Right, though. You know, the point is made, though.
I mean, it doesn't even look like he's playing the same sport as everybody else.
Some of those guys.
He outruns corners, and he's like 6'4" and a half. 245, and he's just dumb what that guy can do.
Yeah.
And he's a sophomore, a true sophomore. Crazy. Let's go back to the phones and to Mark in West Seneca. What do you got for us, Mark? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Good.
Yeah, this wide receiver talk, it is exhausting to me.
can't take it anymore.
I just can't. And here's the reason why. I'm not saying we need to ignore wide receivers. Don't get me wrong. But when you look at the Bills team in the last 3-4 years, any games that we lost, I'd say 9 out of 10 of them, we always end up pointing to the line of scrimmage and how we didn't win the line of scrimmage on either side of the ball. More often than not, on the offensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. And here we are. We just lost a game in the playoffs at home, no less, where we totally got dominated on both sides of the ball on the line of scrimmage. And everybody keeps talking about wide receiver, wide receiver. And the thing that nobody is talking about at all, the Bills haven't really invested in the offensive line in first, second round in a number of years again, at least not heavily enough for my liking. And both the Jets and Miami have no joke front sevens on the defensive side of the ball. And we're talking about bringing in a guy who we may not be able to get the ball down the field to him, which is, by the way Josh likes to throw the ball. He doesn't like the short game. He wants to get it down the field. And then lastly, we talk about Josh wanting to – we don't want him to get hit. We don't want him to get hit. We don't want him to get hit. Well, let's build an offensive line that he can stand in the pocket and he doesn't have to run out of the pocket from away from pressure. And you'll probably eliminate 50 to 75% of the hits he takes by doing that. So the logic in drafting a wide receiver, whether it's at the first end of the first round or even at the beginning of the second round, makes no sense to me whatsoever. We need to invest in our offensive line. And it's about time we do. And with a guy like Josh, who can then be a real dual threat, stand in there and throw it or run when he really feels like it, I think there's no stopping us then. But the wide receiver talk, to me, just got to end. So, thanks, guys.
All right, Mark. Okay. We got to take a break here. We'll address some of your comments. The first thing I'll say is he's right. The Bills have not had a first-round pick as an offensive lineman since Eric Wood in 2009. Cody Ford was the last offensive lineman taken in round two. That was in 2019. But, yes, we will address your concerns. We haven't ignored offensive line. There's just been a lot of pre-draft visits from receivers and stuff, so we figure we talk about it today. We'll address your offensive line comments next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back. We got to address Mark and Wes Seneca's concerns about O-line, D-line. Steve's been on O-line. His favorite guy for the Bills at 27 is Tennessee offensive tackle Darnell Wright. Steve, take it away.
That's right. 6'5", 333. Got a little nasty in him. Has played both right tackle and left tackle. Somebody chimed in on Twitter. I can't really relate how he answered a guy on Twitter who evaluated him. Said,
"Oh yeah, I saw that."
Darnell Wright has no business playing left tackle. He's better at right tackle. And the last thing guy says, he has got no business playing left tackle in the NFL. And Darnell Wright came back at him in an unfriendly manner.
That's right. And said, "When did you play?"
Yeah, when did you play? And called him a name too.
That's my favorite block too. Yeah, that our MSG viewers
yeah,
are saying.
He steamrolls guys into the end zone. So athletic. Plays tackle, got a little bit of nasty in him, and
nimble feet for a 332 pounder.
I think he's going to be a professional football player for 10 years at least. So, get him.
Could
while
do
you
a lot
get
worse
him.
Than that guy. At 27.
And I think he's worth a 27th pick of the draft if he comes in and plays well and is there.
That's the one. Yeah, caveat.
He automatically gets plugged in. Yeah.
At this point, I'm wondering if he is there because. People are all about him right now.
Yeah, he went from being my dark horse shot at the Bills and actually falling to the Bills to, I hope he's there.
Yeah. And as we were talking about yesterday, Jacksonville, who picks 24th, they need a tackle in a big way because they lost Juwan Taylor, one of their starting tackles, in free agency this year. So they definitely have a tackle need, right. And they pick a few spots ahead of the Bills. Now they can pick somebody else.
Yeah, and if there's not a run on tackles by that time, you know, there's still corners and stuff, a deep corner draft, a deep tight end draft, and a deep tackle draft. So there's a chance that one of these really good guys will fall to the Bills and they'll snap them up.
Right. That will do it for a Twitter poll Tuesday. Thanks for all the respondents. It looks like people want the Bills to wait until the value matches up with receiver. Makes sense to me. That's it for us on a Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow at 1:00.